We've talked all week about how momentous of an occasion Kevin Durant to the Phoenix Suns is going to be. Today on Locked On Suns, we talk about the ways KD will actually change this Suns team, how he will make them better on the court in specifics. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past six seasons, a writer at Suns.com, and the host of the Just Basketball Show, wherever you get podcasts. Thank you so much for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Tuesday. Happy Valentine's Day. Happy Suns Basketball Day. We have actually a big matchup against the Kings tonight here in the Valley as well. You can follow along at Locked On PHX Suns on Twitter. But most importantly, I know there are a ton of you who are joining us for the first time, Brooklyn, Oklahoma, maybe the Bay, or maybe you just really love Kevin Durant, or you're a Suns fan coming out of hibernation. Wherever you're coming from, please hit subscribe or follow wherever you're finding this show. We're on all podcast platforms, including YouTube, in your feed Monday through Friday, so do not forget to hit that button and come along for the ride. Today, we are talking all things X's and O's. How do the Suns actually incorporate Kevin Durant, and how much does he really make them better in specifics? Joining us to do that, Jackson Frank. He's a writer at Dime Magazine. He also is a writer at Suns.com alongside me. So very intimately knowledgeable about this Suns team for a very long time. Jackson has been on the show many times before, although not in a while. So we'll break that down and all that in just a second. Today's show, guys, brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of the Locked On Podcast Network. Make every moment more by visiting FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. All right, Jackson, so we've talked a lot about the offense. I did a little bit yesterday at least, and I think that's what most fans kind of get hyped about when they see KD. That's what he's known for. The real like word I kept coming back to was interchangeability. It'd just be very easy to imagine KD in any, really, of the spots in Monty Williams' offense. The screener, the guy coming off the screen, the guy with the ball, the guy handing off the ball in a dribble handoff, the guy rolling to the basket, the guy popping. Like, you could imagine him anywhere. That's what makes him special. What jumps out to you? What are you going to be watching for first when he takes the court in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I think that word of interchangeability is a good one. I think, you know, you look at the two guys that, you know, they lost, you know, that were, you know, in the rotation still playing in Mikal and Cam. I think KD's going to be able to fill a lot of those roles. You know, Cam is often an off-movement shooter. Obviously, I wouldn't say KD is as good, like, firing on the move, but he's still a very good spot-up threat. You know, has more off-the-dribble game, you know, attacking closeouts than Cam, even though Cam's, you know, made strides in his career there. Mikal, you saw kind of the increased on-ball usage, the increased touches, a lot of the stuff out of the elbow sets. I think that's areas KD's going to thrive. It's where he's thrived, you know, in both Golden State and Brooklyn. And then Booker, you know, they run a lot of those Chicago actions, those delay sets with Ayton or whoever the big man is, you know, as a trigger man, you know, handing stuff off. And KD has a ton of familiarity there, especially this year in those types of sets. So those three kind of wing spots that gave you a lot of the scoring juice this year, you know, with Booker, Mikal, and Cam, I think, you know, obviously when Cam played, of course, are all areas that I think KD is really comfortable in. And then, as you mentioned, you can do some rolling. He's played a little bit of small ball five at times this year, you know, when the Nets have been undermanned or whatever it is. So given, you know, it feels like that backup five spot this year has been a bit of a carousel for the Suns in terms of kind of who they want on a night-to-night basis. I wouldn't be surprised, especially in the playoffs, if that's a role that KD is playing behind Ayton. And you know, especially if Ayton's able to keep playing the way he has last week or two, that would give you some really good, you know, I don't think KD's going to play 10 minutes a night at small ball five, but you're basically going to be getting, you know, in a playoffs, maybe 44 minutes of really, really high level play at the center position. And obviously you're going to get as it's going to be high level wherever KD plays. So yeah, I think interchangeability is a big thing. And, you know, the Suns like to deploy off ball scorer. They do a really good job of featuring off ball scorers. You know, you look at Mikal, you look at Cam, Booker, how they've all thrived under Monty's system. And KD is really, really good at that broad skill as well, while also being able to initiate pick and rolls a little bit and give you more scoring boost than someone like CP can, especially at this stage of his career, even if CP remains, you know, quite a useful, you know, pick and roll setup guy.
I think that covers the offense. I really just want to see it. I'm sure there's going to be some wrinkles that we're not expecting. There's just going to be, you know, layers that they're able to add. I think, you know, one of the maybe obvious things, but you kind of can't overlook at the same time to me with the offense is like, you're bringing on somebody who, in addition to being so versatile, is also just like an incredibly smart basketball player, right? So you could easily imagine whatever the Suns had built into their sets with the skill sets of the players they had previously. Yeah, you're only looking at about 20 games to build stuff in, but I'm sure all those guys, including Monty, are already thinking about ways to build upon the pick and roll attack that they'd already developed with Mikhail and Cam and Jay, who had their own skills but were younger and not quite as versatile as talents. Let's go over the defense, though, which is the most kind of, I guess, maybe just because it's new, and it is going to me, the more that I think about it, be where they adapt and play differently the most. And maybe that just speaks to, I do a daily podcast about this team, so new is going to be kind of shiny and exciting to me. But Durant is going to be the best. Like, we've talked for a long time about imagining what it would look like for Ayton to be able to have a bona fide rim protector next to him, you know? And Durant, I don't think that's what people necessarily thought of when they first saw the tweets come across of he's getting traded. But it's going to be a really big, useful part of what Durant's going to be able to provide to this team. He's allowing 56% shooting within 6 feet this year, which isn't the best stat ever, but it is at least a good indicator of what he's capable of. He has his highest block percentage since his first couple years in Golden State, when he was also, you know, counted on to do that more maybe than up until this year with the Nets, having Claxton there at a high level. And Phoenix, like, that's where they've fallen off this year. And part of that is just Ayton not being quite as good. I think some of it is just weak points in some of the team defense that they were able to put together in past seasons. But I just look at all of that, and I get pretty excited, Jackson, about the ability that they're going to have Ayton, to use him more creatively defensively, whether that's doing some of the blitzing and hedging that we'd wanted them to do against maybe Luka last year, switching like maybe Suns fans wanted to see against Giannis, and doing that all the time, or doing it as a core part of a game plan instead of like a break in case of emergency type of thing like we've seen it, where it feels a little too late. They're going to be able to build that in because Durant is going to be an option to patrol that back line, protect the rim, get steals and blocks in the paint, and it's going to just raise the ceiling, I think, of this defense to where it's not just going to be this greater than the sum of its parts type of thing that they've been able to put together. And it's been very elite doing that, but you have the real like dynamic talent, I think, now to make teams think a lot more about what they're going to do to attack you than they maybe had to in the past.
Yeah. I think it really shifts them stylistically or just philosophically, because the way I saw them built, like, at least last year too, you know, when Crowder was, you know, still a member of the rotation and whatnot, is they had those three really good wings, right? And Cam, Mikhail, and Jay, who are all very different defensively as well, right? You know, Mikhail, defensive player of the year finalist, is really good on and off the ball, but kind of makes his mark, you know, hounding guys on the ball through screens. Jay, pretty good at the nail. Cam just kind of feels like he's kind of just sprinkles himself in everywhere. But I think better, like, kind of as a helper than initially on the ball at all times. But and so a lot of the times it felt as though their goal was to not let you get to the rim. And then if they do, okay, maybe Ayton, you know, we'll rely on Ayton to clean things up. But even at Ayton's peak defensively last year, like, I do think he still is like prone to not always contest shots when he should. Whereas now I think when you lose Mikhail and Jay and Cam, you go to a defense where you're probably going to be both because of how the roster looks now and because of who you have, you're going to be a little more comfortable and just having to let shots come to the rim because you don't have the same level of point of attack defense. I think Durant is very good there, but it's not the same as Mikhail. I don't think he navigates screens as well. He's better, I think, in ISO necessarily than a pick and roll. But, you know, to mention, he's really, really been really, really tremendous this year defensively around the rim. You mentioned those stats. Just his motor too has been incredible on that side of the ball. So it shifts kind of where, you know, like you mentioned, remember last year, you know, Luka was so good at getting Ayton or whoever it was on switches and then driving past him. And whether it was because Ayton was struggling or Luka is impossible to stop with his, you know, change of direction, change of pace, they didn't have anyone to provide backline help. Now, if Luka, you know, let's say they're meeting, you know, they meet in a, you know, a playoff series, now if Luka's still able to get that switch against Ayton, there's the chance that like they're not done for if he gets by it. Like KD is still, you know, possible to help things out there. So it feels like they, and I would need to look at the numbers again, but it feels like they'll go from somewhat of a team built on rim deterrence and more of a team now where they can actually protect the rim, in the sense that you might get more shots at the rim, but we might be better about contesting them, which is, it can be a precarious way to build a defense. And again, it's not just like you take that trade off when you acquire Kevin Durant, but just the fact that if you allow teams into the paint more, you put yourself in rotation, things like that. It can be tougher, but they are just way better equipped to handle that if offenses do get them, you know, or they do generate a lot of shots in the paint or at the rim.
I think you hit on a lot of what I had written here myself. I think it's really what you're speaking to, what I'm speaking to, I feel like is just, you know, for Suns fans who have watched this team for a long time and maybe aren't those Brooklynites who are now watching this video, it's going to be people maybe just needing to really reorient how they think about this defense, right? It's just, it's going to look different. And I think that's kind of the more that I think about it, not to minimize what they lose with Bridges, but this isn't a case of them trying to fill a direct hole that Bridges is leaving. And I think there's a bunch of trickle downs of that, right? Like, I think it's kind of a little bit like the way I put it in my notes was like risk. You're embracing risk a little bit more defensively because you're allowing theoretically higher percentage shots, but it's also a little bit more built for the playoffs in its own way, because you're acknowledging that some of that stuff is innately going to happen. And again, I just come back to, you're going to have more answers defensively than you did before. The Suns, just as much as it might have felt like it was on the coaching staff and whatever, and I know there's some nits you can always pick in playoff series, but the thing I come back to with Giannis or Luka or whatever is, it's like the Suns just didn't, they just weren't going to be able to stop those guys in a lot of ways. They just didn't have the capacity to do it, and their best hope was going to be outscoring them. Maybe that's always going to be your best hope, but I just think that's kind of, you even think like, maybe they don't have to foul as much. The frustration Suns fans had so much with the way Giannis was able to get to the free throw line, and he does that against a lot of people, but it was especially excessive in those finals games. Maybe Ayton doesn't feel like his only hope is, I need to foul because otherwise he's going to get a dunk. You know, you just start to really build out from there what will change, and I think it's going to be another thing where we have to kind of watch and see what risks they are willing to take, how much change they can build in over the course of 20 games. There's going to be a lot there, but I just think the bottom line is Suns fans should be less thinking who fills Bridges' hole and how do they get back to what they were doing, and more how do they evolve using what makes Kevin Durant special. But with that all said, we're kind of talking around a lot of the other components, because this is not just a Kevin Durant and DeAndre Ayton team, obviously. It's not just a Booker and Durant team, as we talked about so much with offense. Their rotation is going to have to be reshaped in a lot of ways, and I want to talk about who the fifth starter is, who the fifth closer is, what kinds of guys we think maybe become more relevant with a Durant-centered version of this team. Small ball, a lot of different stuff to get through. We'll talk about that all in just a second. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by the FanDuel Sportsbook. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. New customers, get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back in your account if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drained. I love, first of all, if you're a Suns fan, FanDuel has a sportsbook at the Suns Arena, so you're really just supporting the team in its own way, too. Maybe you just go straight to the sportsbook and you don't even bother with this. I don't know if they'll take the locked-on password there. You'll have to whisper it to them and see, but regardless, what I love about FanDuel, they have these built-out parlays. You can just click them and bet. You can match stuff up yourself, or you can just go a straight down the middle bet. You just like one team in a game, and you do the money line, or you do the spread, and you get your money that way. FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same-game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Okay, Jackson, so let's dive in on the rotation here a little bit. Who do you like as the fifth starter and the fifth closer for the Suns? And are they the same or different? Is that answer different for who starts versus who closes? Just tell me where your head's at with the lineup.
Yeah, I think you're probably going to go with Torrey Craig as that fifth starter again. You know, he filled in for Cam for a lot of this year when Cam was injured. And then also just like has extensive experience playing with Paul and Booker and Ayton. So I think that helps. And but closer wise, it does feel like it should be a pretty fluid situation. Craig, who I think is a pretty solid role player, is not as like game to game consistent, I think, as you would like with role players. Maybe that's kind of why these people are role players rather than, you know, stars or high level starters. But just kind of some of the offensive pursuits he tries at times that are hit or miss.
He's very Jay Crowder like in his own way, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of confidence in their kind of ability to create off the dribble and whatnot. But then, you know, you've got kind of a lot of different options. You know, TJ Warren's looked pretty solid this year. You know, in the times he's been able to play for the Nets, Damian Lee, I feel like has been pretty interesting with his high level shooting and the way he's been able to do some stuff off the dribble. I know you don't really need that at this point if you're the Suns. Like, you're not really worrying that much about Damian Lee's off the dribble game, but the floor spacing is quite nice and clearly at a much higher level than Torrey Craig's is, I think, just in terms of how defenses respect him. But like, if you want to get really big, like maybe Darius Bazley is someone who works his way into the rotation, right? He's been an erratic player with Thunder, but clearly has some defensive intrigue. Moves pretty well. I think his awareness has gotten better as a help side guy. So maybe you just go a gigantic front court. And, you know, assuming that because he's another guy where I think his issue in OKC was he was very erratic as a decision maker offensively. So that's not something that even the Thunder opted to afford this year, and it's not something the Suns will opt to afford either, given kind of where they're at. So those are kind of the three to me that stand out. But I do think it's a good and a bad thing that you have different options. You've got, you know, four guys. You've got a Payne, you've got a Shamit when he's back. Like, I'm not saying these are necessarily guys you want to be in your closing rotation, and the lack of reliability that fifth starter is a welcome byproduct of acquiring Kevin Durant, but they certainly have options, which I think more speaks to the question mark there than some sort of great depth that this roster is housing.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think one other name that obviously could be in the mix, although we don't know, but Monty Williams did start him over the weekend in the first game they played without Bridges and Johnson, or I guess the second one is Josh Okogie. And I think, you know, that to me feels like he's the most traditional replacement for Mikhail defensively. He plays a little like Craig offensively, so another one where it wouldn't be a perfect ideal thing, but he has really made the most of his opportunities at times. And I think he just brings some unpredictability on offense that you could see if he is hot, if he does have an advantage in terms of energy, if another team is just not ready for him. I could see games where he gets a lot of minutes. What do you think of the Terrence Ross signing? I have to admit, not having seen a ton of Terrence Ross this year outside of the odd Magic game that I watched, I don't think he's going to be closing games for them, but it feels like this has been a bounce back season for him. And I think in the regular season, at least he could play a decent amount, especially with Shamit. I think the update today, Jackson, was that he's still a ways away was the language, which when you're in February already starts to get a little worrisome. So Ross could play. I don't know if you like him or dislike him with the Suns team.
Yeah, I think at least offensively, you can run a lot of the stuff you run for Shamit, some of which is also run for Booker. A lot of those off-ball screens, yeah. those via actions, you know, wide pin down, things like that. Because Ross is a pretty good movement shooter, as you noted. He's up to 38% this year after a few down years. Still about league average for his career, but clearly an above-average shooter given kind of his volume and ability to work off the move. But he's another guy who a lot of these wings we've mentioned sometimes tries to do too much offensively, and I don't think offense is going to be a worry for this team. So I do like the Okogie shout. He kind of just escaped my brain. This year, I think it's going to be a matter, right? Like where does Monty and company feel as though that fifth starter needs to provide the most, right? Is it if they play Okogie, is it like going to be too untenable offensively because defense just ignore him and kind of invite him to shoot or invite him to attack off the dribble? Defensively, like are you just short a point of attack guy because Durant can't both be a point of attack guy and a rim protect at the same time? So like, do you just go with Okogie and then you just realize that KD is often impervious to poor floor spacing and can just, you know, get his shot wherever he needs to? And Booker's off, you know, Booker to a different degree is similar in that he can kind of, they're both very, very good tough shot makers, which is why they're stars. So it's just going to, that's why it's going to be really interesting to kind of monitor these next, you know, however many games they get together once KD's back close to All-Star break. But yeah, that's to me is like Monty just has to determine kind of where they feel that fifth star needs to provide the most. And even though it's largely all going to be wings, they're very different wings. These guys, these ones that are, you know, have that role. So basically it's like, if you want to go defense, you're probably going to go Craig or Okogie. If you want to go offense, you're probably going to lean Lee or Ross or whoever else that we've mentioned already, maybe Warren. I don't have a great read of Warren's defense this year. I do think he was a pretty interesting on-ball defender, I guess at this point, 3 seasons ago and a lot of injuries. Yeah. So I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I do feel like his offense has been pretty solid. So that's kind of where I'm at. But yeah, it's going to be something that it feels pretty fluid, and they should experiment as much as possible and just kind of have a somewhat of a firm answer by the time some key playoff series rolls around, which could be, you know, the first round this year, given, you know, where the Suns are.
We'll get into the matchups. We'll get into the matchups to close the show. Some different types of teams they might face and what they might need to adjust and how KD kind of factors into all of that. A few things to add to what you just said. So I do think, just as a reminder for anybody, including Suns fans, like, I do think Monty's default is always going to be to go bigger rather than smaller. And, you know, like most coaches, to trust older players, veteran players over younger players, which I think both of those things probably factor against Okogie, which is why I think Suns fans are kind of reticent to like lean all the way into that and really buy into it. He, even when he's had great games, there might be, you know, the next night he's not in the rotation. It's been up and down with him even when they had better or a more balanced roster and less like need for him. And it could, I guess, get better, but it could also just be that Monty doesn't want to deal with the risk factor. So that's that. I do want to say, though, to the point you kind of made there, like, I was just watching back, I guess, just like fawning, whatever, over the highlights from that 2021 Bucks-Nets series where KD just, like, how little he needed to get space and comfort to score in that series, like, was what jumped out to me the most. And just watching that, I'm kind of like almost more bullish on the Okogie and Craig fits with him, despite their inconsistency on offense, because I do think if you're ISOing more, and like you pointed out, you know, not really as dependent on like pristine spacing as some players might be, you can have Okogie or Craig in a dunker spot even, or you can, you know, focus them in more on like, hey, just cut and be unpredictable and crash the offensive glass and play like a big man basically on offense. There's different ways to fit somebody in when it's that type of offense, which we won't see a lot, but late in games you could see it. Which brings us a little bit to small ball. You talked about it earlier, Jackson, I think. There's a lot of ways they could do it. They could have Paul, Book, Shamit, any combination of Lee, Ross, Warren, Baisley in that Shamit slot, and then Craig, Durant. Like, there's a whole bunch of combinations, as we've kind of already been talking about. The one thing I would say, though, is the Nets have not been able to rebound at all in lineups where Durant is on the court and Claxton is off the court. They're probably not an amazing rebounding team overall. I don't know the exact number for that, but they've really been like first or zeroth percentile level of bad with those lineups. So that's going to be a problem. You can't count on, like you said, with the defense, you can only count on Durant to do so many things. If the answer is defend the point of attack, protect the rim, score for us in isolation at the end of games, and also get 15 rebounds a night, it's not going to happen. So, how much do you think we will see that? How much would you go to that? Or I guess maybe we can dive into the matchups a bit here of which teams we might see it against, because it will be different depending on who they're playing.
Yeah, I think it would be the primary way that I supplement, you know, minutes when Aiton's resting in the playoffs. I would maybe at least dabble in it a bit in the regular season, just because it's something that's worth, you know, getting everyone comfortable with. But yeah, like I said, I think like Jock and Bismack have had their moments this year, but clearly not like neither guy. You're like, oh, we got to have this guy in the playoff rotation, even deep in, you know, if we can make a deep run. So that's why I would go there. That is a good point. Like, yeah, they have struggled. I think, I don't know where they are on the year, but I think they're like bottom three in offensive and defensive rebounding rate. So it's probably just like the fact that like they're already bad to begin with, and then you take off their only like actual center, and the numbers look even worse than they already did. So yeah, so that like I said, that would be my primary way to fill the minutes that Ayton's not playing. Of course, you know, I don't think you can play if you're playing Ayton in a high level playoff series 38 minutes or whatever. I don't think you want to play KD there for all 10 that he sits. But yeah, that would be my go-to, at least for now. But you know, maybe just the fact that, you know, they have more of an insurance, but you know, playing or insurance policy or whatever with KD in there makes it easier for Jock or Bismack to survive for a bit.
True.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, watching the best Nets moments, that Bucks series, and I know they were good in the series prior too, but you know, most of the lineups, especially that second series when Kyrie was out and Harden was, you know, really just like a ball mover, they were closing with, you know, one shooter, Harden, KD, and then usually it was Bruce Brown and Jeff Green, you know what I mean? And those, a lot of those games were pretty high scoring. It wasn't exactly like a defensive thing, but again, like we've talked about with a lot of things, the luxury of having Durant is the margins just get wider for you. You can play riskier. You can have lineups that aren't perfect. You can put people in the rotation that maybe other teams wouldn't be able to afford to have because you have Durant on your team. And like this is all like we're kind of probably focusing too much on Durant because again, he's the addition. We know what, but like having Devin Booker is not so bad either, right? So I do think you can make some less than ideal things work because of him. And I agree to your point. You've reiterated a lot. I will as well, Jackson, like they should be trying stuff in the regular season. I don't think they're going to get too high in the standings. So this isn't, I wouldn't be focused on like, let's really make sure we get to the 2 seed and like surpass the Grizzlies or anything. Like see what happens, try to get home court, at least in the first round, but really focus on, you know, getting ready because you just don't have a lot of time to do it. But with the standings said, we know the Nuggets are going to be a very favorable matchup for the Suns. That's been out there a lot. But how about some of these other teams? The Grizzlies, who I just said, the Warriors, the Clippers, the Mavs, who obviously were the kryptonite last year. We'll dive into some of that, who the Suns maybe will play differently, who they should maybe be worried about, all of that and more. After one more quick break, first today's show, guys, brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. As a small business owner or hiring manager, you know success in 2023 depends on the team members that you surround yourself with, which is why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. With LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles with people who have the skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve those goals. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to your open jobs with their targeting tools. They go beyond just the normal resume data. They use insights from your job posts, your company, as well as their nearly 1 billion member profiles to put your posts in front of the most qualified people. LinkedIn Jobs also makes it easy to screen and rate those applicants based on your job qualifications all in one platform. So why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, I'll just give you the floor here, Jackson. Which matchup with this iteration of the Suns, considering all the kind of things we've talked about that will be different, better, worse for them, is the most worrisome for you? If you're that Suns coaching staff, who's the team you're most dreading playing in the first round?
Yeah, I think the bad matchup to me, I don't dislike any of their matchups substantially right now. I think
Suns fans will be happy to hear that. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, I think for me, it's like I do think the Nuggets are still really, really good. But other than that, like I don't love any of the playoff like West teams from like a deep playoff run. Like I am curious to kind of see if Kennard can give the Grizzlies that level of shooting they need. But I still don't love their defense at the highest levels, and the spacing is pretty poor. I think they're overly reliant on Ja as a creator. I try never to harp on this because I think enough people do, but as good as Jaren Jackson is, like you still have, like if that's who's going to anchor a defense, he still has to prove it in the playoffs. He's got a lot better at fouling in the regular season, but still had big issues last year. So And just coupled with like Steven Adams, I feel like is a fairly match dependent guy. You know, they didn't even play him in the first round against the Grizzlies or the Wolves last year. I don't love the Grizzlies for those reasons. I do think Denver's an interesting one. You know, a guy like KCP is a pretty, like, he's small, but he is pretty good at like getting around screens off the ball. So maybe give Booker some issues. Maybe at times KD's had a lot of trouble with the guys who can get under you. I think about Grant Williams last year. Chris Paul back in his defensive prime was someone who kind of always gave KD issues because of his hands and how much he kind of crowd his, just like his torso and whatnot. So those are the types of guys that really bother KD. They've got some other good, you know, good players in help. You know, defensively, Bruce Brown, you know, is good at shading help. You know, Christian Brown, I don't know if he's necessarily a playoff guy as a rookie, but it's pretty good in that role as well. So I still think the Nuggets just probably, I don't know if necessarily from a matchup perspective, but just because I think that team is still like, at worst, the second best team in the West, whereas everyone else I just don't really love. I'm not that enthused by. So, because I think with Dallas, a lot of their identity last year was how much the duo of Bullock and DFS and even Powell, because they were able to blow up what Booker did, a lot of those handoff actions. And Bullock has been not as good this year defensively. DFS is gone. And I think Ben Powell is still there, but it's clearly a team that's short on wing depth. I like Josh Green. But again, he's only one player, so like they can't duplicate Josh Green, which I'm sure they'd love to. So I think Dallas is interesting, but again, I do like, as we mentioned, you know, Phoenix's inability to stop these dominant drivers, Luka and Giannis, are the reasons that they, you know, didn't do what they wanted in each of the last two playoff experiences. So now if Luka's, you know, Iostomine, whoever it is, and even gave, you know, Mikal a lot of issues in that series, just with his size and whatnot. Now you still have KD as a helper, which I think is really interesting. So. I think it gives them a huge leg up against Dallas. I think both just kind of all of it, right? The fact that they traded for Kyrie, who I think is, and I'm not one of those people saying like the Nets, the Mavs got worse by trading for Kyrie, at least on the floor, you know, as long as Kyrie is around. But I do think it, like, just in conjunction with the fact that triggered KD to, or prompted KD to you know, request a trade to the Suns specifically, it helps them. So for me, it's still Denver. I am kind of curious to see what sort of lineups Denver puts out, because we're talking about, you know, KD being this guy who's impervious to spacing issues. Jokic is kind of the same way in a lot of senses, right? His offensive brilliance allows you to put a lot of defensively inclined guys out there. So their defense is still pretty mediocre on the year, but it's been pretty dang solid the last 30 or so games. I don't know if that translates to, you know, stopping what should be a potent offense like the Suns, but yeah, I still think Denver is really, really good. And, you know, I still have to see what the Suns look like, but that would be the toughest matchup for me, but more from just a quality of team rather than like what they do is going to be completely, you know, impossible for the Suns to defend or to, you know, score against.
Yeah, that's well said. I agree. I don't want to make it seem like everything is matchups, but I do think that's the narrative that's out there. And I do feel like when you're talking about, you know, the worst fears about Jokic as a defender, people do point to that Sun series for the specific reason that the, you know, the pull-up jumpers, the way that they stretched the Nuggets help out, even Aaron Gordon struggling at times, not really through any fault of his own, but just they were so shorthanded in that series, which would be different this time. But you add another piece in KD who kind of punishes the way that Denver plays, although they do have, you know, they have adjusted, they have changed up a little bit. You know, I doubt they would just allow themselves to be beaten to a pulp with the same thing over and over. They just didn't have a way to adjust in that series 2 years ago. So I don't want to overstate the matchup thing, but I do think Denver just uniquely is positioned because they're the second best team, or, you know, maybe some people think the best team. They're going to kind of be compared. Back to Memphis, I do think they're, you know, just accounting for Ja, although I hear you on the fact that, you know, over the course of seven games, I probably just take the Suns being able to score on Memphis over the Grizzlies being able to score on the Suns in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, they're going to miss Bridges in that matchup, I think. And, you know, the idea of trying to contain Ja, maybe you just concede that he's going to get downhill, but then you're talking about, does Ayton get into foul trouble? I do think that the Grizzlies have some players who could match up with what the Suns have offensively. They just have more wing defenders than most teams, so you could see that at least posing a threat. But I agree with you. I really, I can't imagine them surprising us offensively and being able to score enough to where they're going to really change my opinion. So I don't think I would pick the Grizzlies by any means, but that would be one where the Suns would at least have to make some adjustments that maybe some other matchups they don't even really have to worry much about, and the series is more played on their terms. Two we didn't talk about. So the Warriors or the Clippers, do either of those teams feel, I guess, different in how they might match up with the Suns now, or interesting? I think the number one thing that I've kind of already talked about with Golden State is just they had gotten so comfortable with Draymond guarding Chris Paul and just, you know, we're going to switch when Ayton sets a screen, and it was just so formulaic. And so I would be fascinated to see those teams just play and how kind of the dominoes fall. But which of those two interests you? Because those are kind of the only other two real contenders in the West we haven't hit on.
Yeah, I do want to give a shout out to the Kings too. Obviously, you know, they're the three seed. I don't want anyone getting mad at you. So I'm a little lower on them from a playoff perspective, just because of some of my defensive concerns and kind of they rely a lot on early offense, which I think can dry up in the playoffs. But anyhow, yeah, I think that's a big thing. The point about what the Warriors did so well against both the Lakers and the Suns is they just would have Draymond Green and Kevon Looney, and they would switch that action or do whatever they had to do, and they would just combat, you know, whether it's LeBron AD pick and roll or the CP8 and pick and roll. And so now, like, you're way less reliant on that, right? Like, that was part of the issue, is they were so reliant on Chris Paul in his kind of pick and roll creation, and the ripple effects of that. Now you like there's a reality where you're okay to bench Chris Paul because you don't need his passing, and you don't feel like you want to weather his, you know, defensive struggles in space. So I think that's a big thing. The Clippers, I want to see where they're at, you know, with some of these moves they made, but I'm still not particularly enthusiastic about them. I think the defense is good, but not great. I really don't like their stagnation offensively. I think that game against the Bucks, where they blew like a 20-point lead a couple weeks ago, was a really good, I think, kind of reflection or summation of their issues. It was just a lot of ISO ball that resulted in contested jumpers. I think schematically and personnel-wise, they're limited there. I think Plumlee will help, but I do think they're still going to have the same issue with Zubats, in the sense that when Zubats is on the floor, they're pretty dang good defensively, but they don't have like a great offensive big man in there. When Plumlee's in there, they're going to have a pretty useful offensive big man, but he's a pretty wretched interior defender. So that's not to say that, like, I mean, that's how basically any bench player, you're going to have trade-offs. But I don't love either of those teams from a deep playoff run perspective. Again, the Clippers could, you know, change that. Kawhi generally has looked pretty good the last couple of months. I know he struggled a bit as of late, but on the year he looks quite good on both ends, really. I think not his peak defensive levels, but I'm still pretty impactful. So but yeah, I just can't get there with the Clippers. I don't trust the offense enough, and maybe I have too high of a threshold to, like, for what a title contender should look like, considering, you know, I'm skeptical of both the Grizzlies and the Kings, who are 2-3 right now. And the Clippers, who I think are, you know, at least a few games over 500 still, last I checked. I know they had a win streak, and they're hard to keep track of if I'm not checking the standings every night. But yeah, I don't get there with them. And like I said, with the Kings, I think they're good, but they've also, and this isn't their fault, but they've stayed healthy. And I don't trust the offense from, like, I don't think it's going to be an elite offense in the playoffs, just because of that reliance on transition and pace, which are things that, the more you get disciplined, you know, which you're not disciplined in the regular season as you are in the postseason, I think that'll hurt them a little bit on top of, you know, the defensive limitations of that roster. And, you know, I like the Keegan or the Kessler-Edwards signing or pickup, excuse me, but I don't think it's going to be enough, you know, for them to solve all their point of attack and interior defensive issues. So that was a long-winded response. But yeah, I think the big teams here that I think are major players are Dallas and Denver to me. And I think, you know, they definitely got a lot better defending Dallas. We'll see with Denver. It's interesting because, as you mentioned, they did bring in Kevin Durant, but Paul's a lot worse than he was that series 2 years ago. Ayton, we don't know what kind of Ayton we're going to get, whereas he was incredible in that series against Jokic and the Nuggets. So yeah. We'll see. But I think those are two kind of important distinctions. Not that you were saying it was, but, you know, I think, you know, as it's done for a while, there's a lot that, you know, Ayton can be a pretty pivotal inflection point in any deep series. So, you know, take that as you may, as you know, for any Sun supporters listening to that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's honestly, you know, with the theme of the show kind of being like, here's all that could happen, but we'll have to kind of see it. I'm very curious about DeAndre Ayton, you know, like I don't want to overstate the fact of losing people you're close with on the team and make too big of a story out of that not being in his head, but it's not a crazy thing that it could affect him. I do think, you know, especially considering that he has bristled against some of the other people that are at the top of the team, whether that's Chris or Monty or anyone else, and now you take away some of that, you know, that comfort that he might have found with other people on the team. Mikal Bridges has been telling us for 4 years that he, you know, was kind of the Ayton whisperer a little bit. So that stuff combined with how important he is going to be in a lot of these matchups, he's a huge piece. But that's kind of the truth about everybody at this point on this team with how much it's been thinned out and just the obvious expectations to win a championship. So we'll have to see. There's going to be a lot of games against these teams, which is fun. They're playing the Clippers this week. They're playing the Kings tonight when people are listening to this. And I think they have at least one game against all of these teams left on their schedule. So lots of time to test themselves and lots of times for us to learn. But Jackson, thank you for joining me. You guys can follow him at JackFrank_JJF on Twitter. Read his stuff, Suns.com, Dime Magazine, as I said. Lots of good breakdowns of everything, and I'm sure that won't stop as we get toward the playoffs. In the meantime, thank you guys for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Tuesday. We'll be back post-game against the Kings, and tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day. So hit subscribe or hit follow wherever you're finding the show. All podcast platforms, including YouTube. And now, go make Locked On NBA your second listen to get caught up on everything else going on around the league. Yes, there are 29 other teams. Catch up with them wherever you get podcasts as well. And I'll talk to you all tomorrow.